As consumers, we are bombarded by it at every turn, like the Incredible Hulk being bombarded by gamma rays. But what makes some media endure, while others are banished to the forgotten black hole of obscurity, never to be heard from again? Who or what decides this? Hetero life mates Steve and Yehel want to know, and they want to know now. This is Obscurity Now. And what's up, Obscurians? It's time for another episode of Obscurity Now, the show that takes a look at weird and almost forgotten pieces of media that we decide if it should be remembered for all of human history or tossed in the black void of obscurity, never to be heard from again. My name is Steve, and I'm one of the hosts, and with me is the only guy I know who celebrates WrestleMania 365 days a year. It is Yehel.
How are you doing, Steven?
I'm doing great. I'm pumped for, not for WrestleMania, but just for having another
just
live.
Just pumped in general?
Yes, absolutely. I don't get pumped.
Juicing?
I stay pumped. Oh, yeah. You and I, you know, we're old school 80s wrestlers fans, so of course we're on the juice.
Yeah, we're juicing specific. We take performance enhancements for the podcast.
Absolutely. And I love the segment here in Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestlers, which we're about to cover here. Where Hulk shows us how to make a protein shake, but he leaves out some key ingredients, though.
Well, dude, did you catch any of WrestleMania Day 1 yesterday?
No, man. I don't think I've watched a WrestleMania since we were living together and Ric Flair allegedly retired.
Well, I only watched the main event, but Pat McAfee was in commentary, and I'm really not a fan of Pat McAfee. I know a lot of people. Like, I think he's obnoxious. He's the poor man's Don West.
Everyone is the poor man's Don West.
Including us.
It's true.
But he did have a funny, unintentionally funny comment where they were talking about how The Rock hasn't, you know, Michael Cole's like, oh, you know, you got to keep in mind The Rock hasn't wrestled in almost a decade. You know, what kind of ring shape is he going to be in? Yeah, he looks great, but blah, 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 blah. And then Pat McAfee's like, when you get the WrestleMania, you know, you get that WrestleMania juice inside you.
Oh.
Something like that. And then there was just silence. And then I assume everybody hit mute and just started cracking up or something. And then after a couple seconds, Corey Graves or Clark, I can't remember who comes back and is like, oh, yeah, you mean that excitement, right, of being at WrestleMania? And he's like, yeah, of course, that's what I meant.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
I'm sure backstage, you know, Triple H was listening on the headphones and he's like, well, he's not wrong.
As he
shoots himself up in the ass. Yeah, he's like, he's not wrong.
He's definitely not doing any of that these days with his heart issues.
Right. Oh, well, I wasn't aware. But
almost died.
I wasn't aware.
For somebody that wanted to capitalize on this being WrestleMania weekend, sure seemed to be out of the wrestling loop.
Oh man, I barely like current day wrestling. I still watch AEW, even though I hate 75% of the show. There's usually
the booking's gotten
it's awful. It's
pretty bad,
and it's unfortunate because I love Samoa Joe as the champion. I like what he and Swerve, and I guess Hangman before he injured himself. I like that whole thing that was going on there, but everything else is not good.
They have a lot of talent. It's just the booking is really, sorry listener, this is turning into a wrestling podcast, but you know, it's just really inconsistent. Guys will be there for a couple of weeks, then they disappear off TV for a month or two, then they come back, you know. So yeah, and their ratings have been going down. They're at most hitting 800K.
There's also Dynamite. A lot of wrestling for the sake of wrestling. And I get it. They want to differentiate themselves from the WWE as much as possible. But, I mean, you got to give me something. It's here's Will Ospreay for another guy to job out to him, for the third week in a row.
Well, and I don't have a problem with them having, a job match or two, maybe even a show. You know, it's a two-hour show. Plus, they have, Collision and Rampage.
Sure.
So I don't mind that. My problem with it is that they, like you said, they do it a lot. And my real problem with it is that in AEW, every match is always competitive, even if it's a job guy against a guy that, you know, is going to win. And in a sense, I get it. You want to give the fans like a good match. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, is like, why did Will Ospreay or whatever main event level star have such a hard time beating Joe Blow from, you know, FIP Florida Wrestling, you know, right, or whatever.
Hammond Egger Jones. Yeah.
Yeah. No offense to Hammond Egger Jones. I'm sure your breakfast sandwiches are delicious, but, you know, it's dinner time.
Right. Right. But do you watch WrestleMania every year?
I mean, I didn't watch it all the way through. Yeah, I still watch, but pretty much just the matches that I'm interested in, which is often like two or three. Mm-hmm. Like this year, I mean, I wanted to watch the Rock tag match, the Rock Roman against Cody and Seth. And it was really good, actually. It took a little while to build up, but it was really good. And besides that match, the only other two matches I care about really this year is Seth versus Drew, because Drew has been hilarious. They're letting him like just show a lot of personality these days.
I've always been a big fan of him. Yeah, good for him.
And my God, Cody versus Seth.
Yeah, well, as Yael said, everything is going to be wrestling related this month. In conjoined with WrestleMania, which I didn't realize it was at the beginning of the month. I figured they would like wait till the end. Is this when it normally is?
I believe it's always been the last Sunday of March or the first Sunday of April.
So we just got unlucky this go around.
Yeah. I mean, now that it's two nights, I'm assuming that there are. And I say now, it's been that way since like WrestleMania 36, man.
Wow,
which is like kind of wild to think about. I didn't realize it had been that long either. That's like the Mania after Bryan Danielson won the title, I think, right? Because you want to like get 35, or maybe that was Kofi. Anyway, either way, I don't know exactly how they do it now. Maybe they just wait till they get to April, but it's always like at the beginning of April or March.
Sure. All right. Well, today we are covering Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestlers. Before we jump too deep into it, I'd just like to remind everyone that the Kickstarter for Escape to Earth Issue 3 has 8 days left. So if you were thinking about backing or at least checking it out, there will be a link in the bottom, in the description, in the bottom. It'll be at the top of the description. And of course, I will play a promo for it after the show is done if you don't know anything about it. And of course, did you want to go ahead and mention that old Wrestling with Gaming here finally released a new video? How's that going for you?
Yeah, released it a couple days ago. It's covering the development history of the Game Boy. Not really so much. It's not your typical retrospective like a lot of videos on YouTube like that call themselves documentaries about Game Boy. It's just like, these games came out. It's like, you know, they go over like the usual things and they're like, oh, Gunpei Yokoi made the Game Boy. He didn't really make it. It's like, it ended up being like the opposite of what he wanted. So anyways, there was a lot of drama and sabotage of the Game Boy. A lot of people don't know the Game Boy was canceled at one point.
Oh no, by cancel culture?
No, by the president being like, hey, this kind of sucks.
The president of the United States canceled it?
Yep, that's right. Ronald Reagan himself.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past him, or at least Nancy Reagan. You know, she was really taking a dump on video games there for a minute.
Yeah, well, you know, she's the only one that's going to be doing any sucking around.
Wait, I've heard that rumor. Oh, that's a deep cut. I like that. Yeah, that allegedly gave quite a good...
She likes to keep guests entertained.
She's quite the jobber, if you know what I mean.
She's quite the host. and hey, good for her. Not so good for their marriage.
That's how we got elected. Like originally, Reagan was a Republican, right? The Republican Party was like, we don't think this actor is gonna work out as president. And he's like, oh no, have you met my wife yet? And then she just. Then later we were like, whoa,
it's weird that Ronald Reagan was doing like a Mr. Burns impression.
Well,
it's
in
weird.
His later days, that's what he sounded like. I'm sure when he first started running, he wasn't that decrepit, but wow, where is this show going? All right, are you ready? We're talking about Nancy Reagan blowing guys.
Anyways, the Game Boy documentary is out, and it covers like how the Game Boy was sabotaged, how people hated it, and what like what the real developers behind it had to do to get it made. It's a real crazy story that has like a lot of betrayals in it, and it's a fun time.
Yeah, yeah.
Go watch it. There's a lot of CG animation. I worked on very hard. James Bond is involved. There is like a covert operation actually happens.
I gotta watch this thing. No, I haven't watched it yet, ladies and gentlemen, but I plan to. Yeah. All right, are you ready to dive a little bit deeper into? God, that sounds awful. Into Hulk Hogan's rock and wrestling.
Nancy's ready to dive in deeper.
All right, I'll take that as a yes. Here we go.
Welcome to your feature presentation.
All right, so before we get into the IMDb, what is your history with Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestlers? Did you watch it? I assume you did.
Yeah, I mean, I had definitely seen it before as a kid when it was on. But I was never like really like deep into it or anything. It was not like appointment television for me. What about you? What's your relationship?
I think I was pretty obsessed with it. I was a big time Hulkamaniac at the time. I mean, and I just love
the drugs.
Of course, yes. I like to pretend that my Hulk Hogan vitamins were actually steroids. I mean, who didn't, right? It was the 80s.
Sure.
I was a huge Hulkamaniac as a kid. That is, of course, before I discovered WCW and Sting, which we've already talked about. But
well, you must have been extra excited when your boy Hogan showed up to WCW.
Well, I don't know. I mean, at that time, it was just kind of confusing. But it all worked out for a while, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, not long term.
Right. Well, I think when he showed up, it was... I think the first thought of my mind was like, ooh, now Hogan and Sting can finally battle. And then they did, and it was terrible. But
yeah, well, you know what was going on right when Hogan came to WCW,
the
right?
Steroid scandal?
Thunder in Paradise.
Right, of course. Yes, yes.
He was filming that. And, Steve, I have some Thunder in Paradise news to share.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. First, ladies and gentlemen, we've already covered... I think we did the CD-ROM and a regular episode, didn't we, of Thunder in Paradise?
The Philips CDI
game. Okay. All right. So make sure you check out that episode for all your Thunder in Paradise information needs.
Well, speaking of the Thunder in Paradise game, I was finally able to acquire a copy of the PC version for DOS of Thunder in Paradise. It's very, very rare. It has not been dumped properly onto the internet. So once you and I are actually done with this podcast, I finally got it up and running yesterday through DOSBox. I'm going to run through it a time or two just to make sure it all works properly with the way I've got it set up. And then I will dump it on archive.org so that anybody can play the game finally on their PC without needing a CDI.
Nice. Just make sure you, I don't know. Is there some way you can program in a little promo for this show so everyone's forced to see it before they play?
That I don't think that will actually endear people to us. But you know what's funny? On the PC version, the intro of the game is like basically the theme song from Thunder in Paradise, and they play like what I think it's the entire theme from the show, and you can't skip it. You have to watch it. You can skip any other cutscene, any other video in the game. But you can't.
Why would you want to, though?
So it's been real fun testing it and having to watch that every time.
How did you acquire said game?
I've been looking for it for years. A guy was supposed to dump it like back in 2020 or 2021, something like that. Maybe even 2019, because he uploaded like a video on YouTube of the DOS version. And me and my buddy Bob, who runs RetroRGB.com, we had been... You know, we knew it existed, but we had never like seen it or been able to get it. And this guy uploaded like fresh footage of it. He had it. And we're like, hey, so we reached out to him. We're like, hey, can you dump this? Like nobody, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to dump it. He didn't dump it. So after a few weeks, we reached back out to him. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get to it. Long story short, he never fucking got to it. He's one of these guys that seems to be one of these guys that wants to just like, ooh, look what I've got.
Yeah,
you know, I'm special.
Gatekeeper. The only... Yeah, he was taking a dump. That's what he was dumping.
Yeah. But I've had like alerts for it on for like eBay and the other stuff for a while, but that's not how I found it. I just randomly went on to Mercari, and I was like, let me just see if it's on here. And it had literally been listed that day.
Nice. Well, we're talking about it, I too have come across a very obscure grail, if you will, of a comic book that would be perfect for this show. Unfortunately, as far as I can tell, it doesn't, much like with Your Thunder in Paradise, no one has done a digital scan of it. There is a comic. Apparently, the NHL hired Stan Lee to make superheroes of all of the hockey teams, and they made a comic book out of it. I want to read it so bad. The art is actually pretty amazing, but and I went on to OfferUp, and like someone here in town like had a copy of it, and I initially made an offer, and I guess it was like lowball, so I never heard anything back. So I kept, you know, offering more, and I noticed they were never getting the message. So I went to a different item on the person's account and made an offer on it, and then got a reply, and I was like, I don't want that. What I really want is this comic. And the guy was like, oh, I don't live in LA anymore. I don't even know if I have that book. It's laying around my parents' house. But if I find it, or if they find it, I'll let you know. And I was like, okay, I'll leave you alone now. And I've never heard anything back since. And all the copies on eBay and that I've found like on auction are just too expensive for something that's, you know, basically worthless. It only has worth to me, Steve, the host of Obscurity Now. No one else wants it. Maybe some hockey fans do, but yeah, so if anyone listening knows where I could get a hold of a copy of that, either digitally or physically, please let us know in the comments. All right. So back to Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestlers. I think we pretty much covered our history with it. I didn't really remember any of the plots or any of the actual, you know, themes of the episodes. And after watching this pilot, I think I can see why. More on that later. Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestlers premiered September 14th, 1985, two seasons. And we are watching the first episode that has two stories in it. One of them is called The Junkyard 5000, and the other one is called Junkenstein. And here is a synopsis for both. Junkyard Dog and Roddy Piper race to decide who gets to have their car be in a new movie. And then, yeah, ridiculous. And if it doesn't get any worse, here's the synopsis for the second episode. I guess I should have saved it for, whatever. All right, inspired by Frankenstein, Junkyard Dog builds a robot out of junk, but it gets Roddy Piper's mean personality. So right off the bat, you hell, riddle me this. The show is called Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestlers. And here...
Rockin' Wrestling.
Sorry. Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. I think I've been calling it Rockin' Wrestlers for my entire life.
The whole time.
So you'll have to bear with me. It's called Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. And the two stories that they have in their premiere episode are all about the Junkyard Dog. Well, what's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I assume that maybe that's how all of these... episodes are like that. They tend to concentrate on a wrestler. Do you have a problem with some love being spread?
It should be, but why do both of them have to be about Junkyard Dog? Like, I would think that for your pilot episode of Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, one would be featuring Hulk Hogan.
He said it.
He's got like three lines.
Yeah.
I actually remember, even as a young tyke watching this, being disappointed with the amount of Hulk Hogan that is in Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling.
I mean, it sounds like you as an adult are still very disappointed.
I mean, are you not?
I mean, I don't really care.
Hey, you're an internet critic, buddy. It's your job to care.
It didn't bother me. I mean... other things about this show bothered me. Like, I don't know, the writing.
Well, of course, but I mean, this is, all right, this is the tip of the crapberg, basically. The fact that it's called Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, and in your very first episode, there's very little Hulk. It's just false advertising, is what I'm saying. False advertising.
All right, see, I guess this is something that you're very passionate about. I can see.
Yes, of course. I am passionate about animation. But anyway, okay. So this was directed by one Bruno Baiocchi.
Oh, I thought you were about to say Bruno Sammartino.
Is he in this? I don't think he is. So he directed 25 episodes of Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. I think that would be pretty much the majority of the episodes. And he got started on Rainbow Bright, and he had actually most of the people behind the camera are pretty much legends, if you will, for Saturday morning cartoon animation. This guy had quite the career. He worked on Mask, and I didn't realize this existed. This might be worth looking at one point. Gadget and the Gadgetinis. And it came out in and it stars Inspector Gadget, and I guess he's got some, I don't know, sidekicks or something. There were 51 episodes that this Bruno guy directed of that show.
I've never heard of this.
Me either. So it must be great. Anyway, this was written and created by one Jeffrey Scott, and he created another sort of Saturday morning cult favorite, I would say, The Muppet Babies. He also created this other one called Little Muppet Monsters, Dragon Tales, and something else called a TV movie called Pegheads. He also wrote,
I know somebody that tried to get me into that. Wait, what are we talking? Oh, Pegheads. I'm sorry. Sorry. I misunderstood.
Oh boy. Here we go. He also wrote a lot of classic stuff. The original TMNT, Star Chaser and the Legend of Orin, which we're going to cover someday because that movie was really good. Thundar, DuckTales, Dungeons and Dragons, which we've already covered, and James Bond Jr., which we also covered. And this was produced by Deke Entertainment. They've done Straight Sharks, Mask, Bobby's World, Zelda. I mean, we've covered a lot of Deke stuff, for better or worse. And of course, also produced by Titan Sports and WWF. And that's going to do it for me. Who are some of the voice actors to blame for this show?
All right, so first up, we've got Charlie Adler, who we've covered in almost every animated thing that we've touched on, because, well, if it's animated, he's probably in it. so yeah, he's been Transformers, see Starscream, he's in Tiny Toon Adventures, he's in everything. I'm tired of talking about Charlie Adler. Anyways, he does the voice of Roddy Piper here, and it seems like he just like basically watched one Roddy Piper promo where Roddy Piper was doing like one of his exasperated kind of promos. And he assumed that that's how he always talks. So, like, every time he's talking, he's like, I'm Roddy Piper.
Yeah, no offense to Charlie here. He normally does great work, but his Roddy Piper impression is terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. We've got Louis Arquette, who is playing the voice of Superfly, Jimmy Snuka. There's a lot of people in this cast, so I'm not really going to go over everyone's like backstory unless there's something particularly interesting in there. But he's done a bunch of stuff, mostly live action. I don't know if all his animated work is voicing like a murderer or if it was just something special for Snuka, but I don't know.
If you've got a possibly unconvicted murderer to be voiced in a cartoon, Louis Arquette is the guy you call.
That's your guy. Jodi Carlisle did the voice of Wendy Richter and the Fabulous Moolah. Again, a bunch of animated stuff.
Can you refresh my memory on who Wendy Richter was? I haven't.
She was like the main women's champion in WWE during the 80s.
I see.
Okay. So yeah. She was like the good looking baby face women's champion and stuff. then we've got George DeCenzo. He plays Captain Lou Albano. Again, he's been in a bunch of stuff, a lot of animated stuff. Like he was in She-Ra, Princess of Power. He was also like in some live action stuff, but moving along, we've got Ron Feinberg, who does the voice of Andre the Giant. He, however, was unbeknownst to me until just right now in Star Trek Klingon Academy, but do not play the bumper yet, okay, my friend. You know, while we're at it, we can go ahead and talk about James Avery, yeah, who plays the voice of Junkyard Dog, featured very prominently, much to Steve's dislike and dismay in this episode. But James Avery is also in two episodes of Star Trek Enterprise. Did you know that?
I think you told me in the past, and of course, you know, you can't not mention that he was the voice of the original Shredder.
Yeah, and also he was obviously in
Fresh Prince.
Thank you, Uncle Phil. But those are our Star Trek connections for the show.
All right.
Oh no! We just entered another Star Trek connection. Ah.
All right. Were you finished with the voice cast?
No, I wasn't. It's just once I saw the guy had a Star Trek,
course,
I was like,
I
might as well just do it
you
now.
Got fully erect. I hear
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. Red alert. Ernest Harada plays the voice of Mr. Fuji. His very questionable accent used in there. We've got Brad Garrett playing the voice of Hulk Hogan. Brad Garrett, man, I don't think this guy's funny at all. What did you think about his Hulk Hogan impression?
It wasn't terrible.
I agree.
For the other, which, because they have Hulk Hogan as himself on, it says like one or two episodes. Was that just for the live action ones, or?
I think it's just the live action skits. Yeah. And then Neil Ross plays Mean Gene Okerlund. And Aaron Kincaid plays the Iron Sheik with another questionable accent and questionable drawing.
Oh, yeah. Questionable animation, sure.
Yeah, yeah. But that is our cast.
We can't forget Pat Fraley, though. He was...
Did I mention?
No.
Oh, I've got him pulled up right here. Yeah, this dude's been in a million different things. It sounds like... I know what you want to talk about when I come
Brave
to
Brave Star?
That's not what I thought.
Well,
you were
which one?
They're gonna go over him being Krang.
Oh, I always forget that he was Krang. But okay,
it looks a little
that
like
works
Krang
too. So we got two TMNT alums here doing voiceover work. Good for them. This show didn't stop their careers at all.
We do have in the chat. Creative Cavey's Corner has joined us. Welcome. Oh, good. He brought us a note for your shirt. The real muscles we need to flex are our brains.
No fear.
No fear.
That's good. That's very educational. I don't think No Fear would actually go that way, but I like it.
That's like the shirt No Fear came out with after it got arrested for a DUI. It has to do community service.
That's good. All right, man. You ready to talk through this thing?
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go through the curtain at Gorilla.
So the theme plays with live action footage of Hulk pointing at a wrestling ring. I think they were trying to sync up his pointing, like with the beat of the music, sort of, but it doesn't exactly work. I'll describe the theme and let me know what you think about it.
It's like if you took some instruments and threw them down stairs and recorded.
Oh, so you didn't like it?
And it might have been the quality too of the video that I watched for these episodes, because it wasn't super great, but it just kind of sounded like a bit of a mess to me, the song.
I don't know.
I liked it.
I think the music at times is like really the only thing that I could tolerate from this show.
I did think it was interesting. I mean, I guess we can. Well, I'll just bring it up. I've already brought it up. In the second episode, the Frankenstein episode, that story that they told, they play like a knockoff Thriller.
Oh yeah.
Song, and I thought that was actually pretty good.
Right. Well, this theme, it's composed by Jim Steinman, And he actually wrote Total Eclipse of the Heart. Ah, you get it? Eclipse? Eclipse reference? Because there's an eclipse going on. But it's true. He actually did. And then he also wrote what I'm sure is like one of your favorite songs of all time, I Would Do Anything for Love by Meatloaf.
I actually had that album. I do
like
that song.
I like that song, too. I actually like Meatloaf a lot. But I, yeah, as I said, I like the theme, even though I think it's weird for a Saturday morning kids show. Like, there's no, I mean, no lyrics. There's, I mean, I guess there is lyrics. It's just saying Hulk over and over again. And it's not even animated. So, I don't know. Maybe kids would find it confusing, but I didn't. I stuck around. So, what do I know? Anyway, it switches to animation. The theme is still going. Basically, we see Cartoon Hulk. He gets into his convertible Cadillac and his pursuit.
By the way, Steve, I just, sorry to cut you off, but I just got a message from a friend of mine that was trying to watch the show. The link in the your tweet for the show, for the channel is broken.
Oh, gosh.
It once again cut off the last few letters, so just
okay. I mean, should I post a new one now, or?
I mean, I've already tweeted all right.
Okay. Roddy and his hot rod pursues Hulk in his Cadillac. And then the Sheik and the other heels and their ridiculous vehicles show up as well. They stop. Piper gets out, but then they leave him in the woods for some reason. And then they cut to live action Hulk walking through a city and getting mobbed by fans. And that is basically it. Any thoughts on any of that stuff?
It did not really get me too excited for the episode, I must say. I guess I just thought there was going to be more wrestling stuff.
I hear you.
And I was like, there's not going to really be.
Right.
I
think I was on IMDb, or maybe it was when I was searching for images for the Obscuratron. I saw someone else had previously covered this, and they titled it as Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, a show with no wrestling, something like that. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty much it, because I think it would have required more money and more animation to actually require, to have them actual wrestling, but whatever.
Well, yeah, that makes sense, because they probably wouldn't be able to reuse as many bits of animation.
Exactly.
If you're having like two guys have to like be involved with doing moves to each other and stuff. So yeah, that makes sense.
Should have had Ralph Bocci and just rotoscope everything. I mean, that would save some time. Okay, so then we cut again. You would think after the opening theme ends, the first thing you're going to see on the first episode of Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling is Hulk Hogan. But no, we see Bobby the Brain Heenan. He's talking about fitness. He's in a...
We see live, like real, yes, Bobby the Brain action. Heenan. Now, so you don't even see a cartoon. Is it even the first thing you see? It's Bobby the Brain Heenan with little shorts on and a tight shirt.
Yeah. Maybe he was on the gas back then, or just eating a whole lot. Who knows? But yeah, and he's talking about fitness. He's supposed to be, I guess, backstage in like the locker room or whatever. He very poorly on purpose lifts up a barbell and then throws it down. He says he doesn't need this junk because he's Bobby the Brain and he's like too intelligent or something. What did you think about Bobby the Brain here?
Surprisingly unfunny is what I would say. Yeah, it was pretty disappointing. I mean, maybe it's at first I was thinking, well, maybe it's because it's for like a kids show or whatever that he just couldn't do anything too funny. But it's like, well, wrestling at the time was basically marketed towards kids anyways, and he was still able to, I don't know. It was just very unfunny sketch. I don't know like who wrote it. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they had writers, you know, that were not involved with the WWE like coming up with these skits.
Oh yeah. Of course, yeah, I pretty much feel the same way. I mean, Bobby the Brain, if you've ever heard his commentary, especially during the Nitro days on WCW, brilliant, hilarious guy. And here we get something that feels like a first draft. And yeah, it's hard to tell if it's like if it's improv or if they just gave him a poorly written script. And yeah, it's disappointing. It's not funny. There's like barely a punchline, but it's not just him. All of the live action sketches are this way, and pretty much the animation too, as we're about to see. So we cut to the title page, and it's The Junkyard 500 by Jeffrey Scott. And now we're in the episode, and we're inside the warehouse in Junkyard's junkyard, and that's what it says on the sign. The Junkyard Dog answers the phone, and he fills out an order for 2 bowling balls. He's like, I don't know, pulls on a lever, and just bowling balls just roll out. And yeah, I don't know who calls a junkyard to get bowling balls, but he's got them. For some reason, Tito Santana is nearby, and he reads a newspaper and says a famous filmmaker is searching for a vehicle to put in his latest monster movie.
Did you catch the name of the filmmaker?
Brooks. Phil Brooks.
No, wasn't it something like Woody Spielberg or something like that?
They say his name later, and it's like they just call him Mr. Brooks. Okay.
You know what? I could just check on this because I did have the IMDb up here a second ago. So I'll come back to you.
Okay, please do. So basically they'll pay $10,000 for a vehicle in this movie. JYD says, $10,000, get down. And he snaps his fingers. What do you remember about Junkyard Dog? Was that like his catchphrase, like get down and snapping his fingers and things like that?
I don't remember him doing it. Didn't he like bark?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He would get like on all four. He kind of like a little bit like Rick Steiner would do, right?
Yeah, because he was the Junkyard Dog, and he had a chain around his neck.
Yeah, that's kind of what I remember. And I liked the Junkyard Dog as
too.
A kid. He had like a lot of energy. But yeah.
All right, so now we're outside a movie studio. JYD and Tito pull up to the gate in like the ridiculous junkmobile. The guard says, "You can't bring that hunk of junk in here." And JYD shows them the newspaper ad, but because, of course, no one in the studio bothered to tell the guard what was going on. And Junkyard Dog is like, "I'm going to be a star." And he's like, "Well, I see no problem then." Like, the guard kind of, you know, welcomes him in. And then JYD proceeds to just go ahead and drive through the gate anyway, because I guess that's supposed to be funny.
Yeah, like he didn't notice the gate was up, even though he stopped because there was a gate.
It's so unfunny. Gosh, like all the bits and like gags and stuff at a very first draft. Just, I don't know. Do you think Vince McMahon was just like, just get me a script. Doesn't have to be good. They're just kids. Like,
yeah, I mean, probably. And this is like around the time that they were doing the, if I'm not mistaken, the stuff with MTV and Wendy and Cyndi Lauper,
right?
Which is like why they had like this show called The Rock and Wrestling Connections. I think the live action stuff they were doing with Cyndi was called like The Rock and Wrestling Connection, and that's why they named this the Hulk, Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling. So yeah, clearly not a lot of thought went into this.
No, sadly. So we are inside the movie set. Junkyard Dog runs over some actors who are in mid-shoot. That's more, horror movie level than it is Looney Tunes, but whatever. He tells the director he's there for the ad. And then we cut to Piper's Hot Rod. He zooms past the previous guard into the studio, up to the set where Junkyard Dog is. And he tells the director that his car is the one that he needs. And he says the junk wagon is the one that he wants. Then they begin pulling the arm. Junkyard Dog and Roddy Piper, they begin pulling. Each one grabs an arm and a leg of the director. And they're basically doing a tug of war with a human being.
And King Solomon comes and says, split this man down the middle. Each of you take a half.
Wow, nice Bible reference.
The God made me the wisest man in the world.
I'll see you at Bible study later tonight. So basically, again, who I think is named Mr. Brooks, the director, he says that...
You might be right. And by the way, it's not in the IMDb credits. So
yeah, there's very little info on this show on IMDb. Just sort of the basics. But Mr. Brooks, the director, says for them to work it out themselves by having a race. Like, you think if he was the director, you know, he could just make a choice himself because he's basically in charge of this entire production. But whatever, right, then we wouldn't have a plot. And I'm doing quotation marks here for those of you who are just listening and not watching. So cut two, we are back at Junkyard's Junkyard. The Junkmobile is surrounded by Hulk and some other face or good guy WWE, or at the time, WWF superstars. And Hulk says they're going to tune up the junk wagon so he can win. And then there's a bunch of unfunny physical comedy. Tito tells Hulk to try the brakes. And a boat anchor shoots out the back of the Junkmobile. And then I guess they try to drive forward. And it causes the Junkmobile to, like, get up on its, like, end. And that, and Tito, what does Tito Santana say?
Does he say Arriba? Arriba!
Yeah, come on. You got to put more into it than that. Come on.
Arriba!
Oh, there's.
He does not say
Tito,
like that.
Santana was there for you, Yahel, for you, so you don't feel left out.
How nice.
That's right. So cut to now we are at the bad guys' garage, or villains, if you will, and they're all there, and they're adding a bunch of gadgets to Roddy's hot rod. I mean, that's really all there is to say there. They have some, again, some unfunny sort of Looney Tunes-esque physical comedy. I didn't even bother to write them down. I mean, unless there's anything you'd like to highlight.
No.
So we cut to the race. They're about to get started. Roddy is wearing his sunglasses from They Live. Did you notice?
Is that what they were supposed to be?
I'm pretending they are.
I see. That makes a lot
and
more
yeah,
sense.
And here, this is when I write down, I hate his voice so much.
I was so distracted by his voice, man. It's funny because his voice was so distracting, I couldn't pay attention to what he was saying.
Oh yeah, it's like so fast and garbled. It's not good. So the Sheik tells Nikolai Volkov to attach a chain to the back of the Junkmobile. They raise the flag to start the race, but the Junkmobile just won't go because it's chained down. Get it? Nikolai points out that the chain is attached to the bench that they are sitting on, and the Junkmobile pulls them into a movie theater that is broadcasting the race hosted by Mean Gene? How did that even happen?
I don't know. It's so weird. Yeah, there's like five people in the theater, and he's like, welcome, wrestling fans.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I would say it's bad editing, but I don't think they bothered to just animate some of the stuff in order to save money. Because all you see is like the Junkmobile pulling the bench with the bad guys on it, and then cut to they're inside like a theater watching it. And yeah, basically I had to roll back the video just to understand what was going on.
Why is Big John Studd driving for Piper?
Oh, I was gonna
anyway.
Ask you who that was. Yeah, I thought that was weird too. I was like, why does he need someone to drive the Hot Rod Mobile? I mean, wouldn't Roddy Piper drive the Hot Rod Mobile? But hey, this is Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling with very little Hulk Hogan, so.
I mean, I guess it was just to get more of these characters in the show, which I do wonder if it was a way to, I'm assuming that the actual wrestlers, like the actual real-life Junkyard Dog and Tito, blah, 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 that they were getting some kind of royalties for their likenesses being used. Yeah. So it might have been a way to just get them more money, get them paid out. Because I know, like, you know, infamously Vince was always good about, like, doing, like, battle royals and things like that, like at WrestleMania. So everybody got a big payday and that kind of stuff. So maybe it's something Vince worked out.
I was going to say that sounds very probable. And also, you know, the whole point of this show is to sell action figures. So you might as well.
Right. So you want to feature as many of your guys as you can. Sure.
So now we are with Nikolai and the Sheik again. They paint over a bridge out sign that is next to a bridge. And then they inadvertently give each other blackface. I was very offended. I hope you were too.
It was really weird too, because like Nikolai Volkov tells Sheik that he looks like a Russian raccoon.
Yeah, something like that.
Which I'm like, man, that sounds like the most racist. Like, it's not even like a real, you know, like racist term or anything, but doesn't
right.
it sound
oh,
like
you
it could
to
be
tell
one?
Me you never called a kid a Russian raccoon back in the 80s?
I mean, that just sounds ridiculous. But the way that they drew the Sheik was, they gave him like a big, stereotypical, like, kind of like racist character type mm-hmm. nose. And like a hook nose almost, and he doesn't have a nose like that.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, or maybe it was to try to make him look more villainous. But yeah, it all looks pretty awful.
Yeah, it might have been, you know, benign, but it doesn't. It looks like somebody was trying to draw like if you just saw this drawing of him, you would think like somebody was just drawing like a racist caricature of some, you know, like Arab.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure that's what they were going for. Yeah, no doubt about it.
So
the Junkmobile takes the bridge and falls into the water, but JYD turns on these paddles and it's able to float down the stream and back onto the road. Junkyard Dog then sees a dog on the road, so he stops. But of course, Roddy and the Diamond Stud, you know, they don't care about stuff like that. So they hit the rocket boosters on the hot rod and they rocket their way into the studio and win. And I was just like, oh my gosh, did the bad guys actually win? Roddy gets his money. Then they immediately start shooting the scene that yep. the vehicle is going to be in. That is some amazing planning. You know, I've spent a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You know, working background on film and TV, and usually things aren't planned that well, but
whoever scheduling this set,
yeah,
kudos.
Absolutely. So this giant Godzilla type monster smashes his way through some buildings all the way to the hot rod, which he then just basically dismantles and takes apart.
Yeah, like steps on mm-hmm. and squishes it and throws
and then,
it.
And Hulk comes by. He looks at the wreckage of the hot rod and he says, "A star is born? More like a piece of junk was born." And then he kicks a radio. What did you think about Hulk's one-liner here?
Real strange.
Unfunny. Not even. It's like you can't even call it a pun or a... It's nothing. It's just...
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to blame Brad Garrett. Yeah.
The voice actor?
Yeah,
I'm gonna blame the writer. Scott.
I'm gonna assume he wrote it.
Oh,
I'm gonna assume sure. he ad like they had something better and he ad libbed that. The guy sucks.
Oh, all right.
He's just not
sure.
I just don't think he's funny or even a good actor.
I don't know who Brad Garrett
he's
is.
He's the brother on Everybody Loves Raymond, a terrible show.
Oh, yeah.
He's the
yeah,
big tall
liked...
guy.
Oh, I don't think that guy is terrible as an actor. I don't think he's. I mean, he never did stand up or anything, did he?
I don't know. But he's cast like I don't know if it's because of Everybody Loves Raymond. He's been cast in a lot of like comedic things.
Yeah, well, he's got kind of like a funny voice and kind of look to him. But yeah, the stuff that he does is not funny, as you say. Basically Hulk, after he delivers this terrible line, I guess he kicks what's supposed to be the radio from the hot rod, and it falls near Roddy Piper, and Roddy yells out, "I hate rock and roll," and then starts punching the radio. And then Junkyard Dog comes by and he goes, "Another one bites the dust," and then that's it, it's over.
Yeah, pretty much.
What did you think when Roddy Piper started beating up like a car stereo?
You know, I could see him doing that, actually. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Let's see if I can fix you here. All right, there we go. But I don't know. It's like they wanted to add in a line about rock and roll, I guess. So that's why that whole thing was there. I don't know. But let's just get this over with. All right, so now we cut to live-action footage of the most 80s gym ever. There's like a bunch of people in there working out, like men and women. They're not, I guess they're just extras, if you will.
But does gym, Steve, it's just like they're on a soundstage or sure. something. And it's just like a backdrop, like a purplish gray backdrop. And they added like a sign that's like on a desk that says like Miami Street Gym or something, but it's like backwards. So it's supposed to be like a window.
Wow. I guess. You paid closer attention than I did.
Yeah. And, you know, they just have like a workout bench in the middle of this room.
It's like the most
and,
minimal set dressing they could possibly do.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cheap, very cheap.
So, yeah, Hulk is helping Mean Gene work out, and Hulk then makes a protein shake, and then he returns to Mean Gene, who is now sleeping on the bench. Nothing really funny was said or done, so I didn't bother to write it down. Do you have anything else to add?
No, it was pretty bad. The only thing that was almost funny was just, like, Hogan talking to himself while he was making like the protein
yes.
shake, because he's like clearly just like ad-libbing whatever, but he like can't go as crazy as like he would in a wrestling promo,
right.
So it's just like him trying to contain himself.
He doesn't get to do the backstroke off camera.
right.
That's his like best promo ever. I'll go on record as saying that. Do you think that these live action segments were scripted or improv'd?
I mean, I think that they were scripted, but maybe there were a couple things that they improv'd here and there. But I don't know. They seem pretty scripted to me, because I'm sure they needed them to be like very short, you know, keep to a certain time.
I think they just maybe had a vague idea and were like, hey, do this and try to make it funny. And they didn't give it enough time, so we got what we got. All right, you ready to move on to the final story here?
Yes.
Okay, so... oh, wait, there is another live-action segment that I almost skipped over. Nikolai Volkoff is helping a woman who locked her keys of the car, yet somehow she parked her car on a soundstage.
Yep, it's the same stage that they just moved the two pieces of exercise equipment. They just moved it out, brought this car in.
And he helps her by gently removing the door of the car. And then she like freaks out. Oh, you destroyed my car.
My beautiful
car.
Yeah,
it reminds me of that bonus stage in Street Fighter 2. Almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he puts the door back on. And again, no punchline. There's no like craft. Like, you could make this work somehow, but they obviously didn't have the time. They just did maybe one or two takes, and this is what they got. And now we see the title card for the next story, which is Junkenstein, by Jeffrey Scott. And it's another Junkyard Dog story. So if you love JYD, this is the episode for you. So it's raining. And once again, we're inside Junkyard's junkyard, office, if you will. JYD reads Frankenstein to Andre the Giant, and it scares Andre so bad, he falls out of his chair and knocks a bunch of stuff over. Junkyard Dog sees a mannequin with a mop on its head, and, as if it was hair, basically, and it gives him the idea to build himself a helper to help him clean up the junkyard. Is this how you get your ideas, Yael, for your videos?
Mm-hmm. I just wait to see what's on the mop that day or the mannequin.
I remember that's how we used to write songs in Estancia. We would just, whatever junk was laying around, bam, that's a song.
There you go.
So now Junkyard Dog, let's see, we see there's like a transition, basically. We see a kite flying above the warehouse in the storm. Somehow JYD now has a complete mad scientist setup inside his office. Why would that be there?
I don't know. I mean, and who knew that JYD was so smart?
Yeah, he's just...
I mean, he's wasting his talent by wrestling. This guy should be... designing, life-changing and saving, technology.
Yeah, he should be working on the Large Hadron Collider or something like that.
Yeah.
So he tells...
You mean the thing that opens portals to that for demons to come through, Steve?
Is that what's going on with the eclipse?
that's like one of like those stupid QAnon theories. Yeah, like the solar that like the Large Hadron Collider is going to be used to open up portals during the eclipse to let demons.
I don't know. As long as we've got a doom guy around, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, he tells Andre to crank up the juice. Junkyard Dog then assembles the robot, but like they have like a cover so they don't have to bother animating the actual assembling of said robot. He pulls a lever, the roof opens, the table raises the robot all the way up in the sky, and you can see it like barely getting struck by lightning in the background. He then retracts the table. The robot is now glowing and operational. And how does he upload some firmware into this robot, Yehel?
He just sticks a cassette tape in his mouth.
Which, I mean...
And then he, like, caresses his robot lips and said, "That's a good girl."
I think you might have made that second part up. But, this does work because wasn't there like an add-on to the Atari where they had like cassettes that you could play games?
Oh yeah, no. In the 70s and 80s, I mean, cassettes are like, and tape in general, like it's a real medium for storing data. So yeah, you could get games on cassette and programs, and you'd have to, there'd be like a special, you know, cassette player that you'd connect to your computer, blah, blah,
so
blah.
So what you're saying there is that this is based on real science.
This is scientifically accurate.
Weird science. So he then calls the robot Junkenstein. Now it's the next day. JYD tells Junkenstein to clean up the junkyard, and he does, and it looks great. And now Junkyard Dog thinks he can make more robots to do all kinds of stuff. He said he needed like a plumber, and do you remember the other ones?
I don't remember. It was just households, a butler, plumber.
So Andre, like, with like no motivation, approaches the robot and puts in a new cassette that, for whatever reason, has a Roddy Piper's personality on it. Why would that just be laying around Junkyard's junkyard?
I don't know. That's it made no sense. And even if he did have it at the junkyard, why is it in his stack of programming tapes? Like
so I mean, I can only assume, you know, on your at your place, you've got a shelf like with all of your consoles that you've collected over the years. I just assume that you also have a collection of cassettes that has like my personality, Andy's personality, and all your other friends.
Right. I secretly recorded you to capture your personalities.
Right, so you can make robots out of all of us. Awesome. Do you have one with Phil's personality on there? Because we need a Philbot.
I was gonna make a joke, but
I mean, I think I'm already going down a bad.
I don't need a robot to play off.
Oh snap!
I love
Phil.
Yeah, we Phil is a great drummer, but he was very ambitious with some of his drum fills.
Yes. All right. So this is I love this episode. It's really gone off the rails here and there.
Phil would have laughed.
He would have. Actually, I didn't think his he didn't have that great sense of humor. But anyway.
I thought he had a great sense of humor. He had like that real British, like dry.
Yeah, but sometimes I feel like I just remember we were like, "Oh, your stage name should be Phildo," and I could tell he legitimately did not think that was funny.
He didn't like it at first, but he ended up getting into it later on.
Oh, I bet he did. Okay, all right.
Just ask Nancy. Yeah.
Way to bring it back around. All right.
Yeah, that's what she did.
Jesus Christ. Okay. So Piper puts the cassette into the robot. The robot goes nuts, spins Junkyard Dog and Andre around. Then he spray paints like blue paint on the junkyard warehouse. And then he paints Junkyard Dog and Andre. So two episodes now, people have gotten painted for like no reason. So now they have Smurf face.
It's funny, man.
What?
It's funny, bro.
I guess that's comedy was at a real low point in the 80s, I guess.
Yeah.
So he throws tires at them because that's definitely something Piper would do. They try to stop him, but they can't, and he gets away. Junkenstein scares random people, like, downtown. They try to give him a new cassette, but he puts them on a random piano and pushes them down the street, so the piano just sort of rolls away. Totally lame.
Pianos, man. Pianos and cartoons, man. They're always funny, man.
I mean, yeah.
You guys got to put a piano in there. That's what's funny.
Can we have a Roddy Piper, like, shit his pants and someone go...
Yeah. Or maybe he shits on someone's head. I don't know.
And then Hulk goes, what's that smell? And then he goes, dookie. Throwback to No Holds Barred, everyone. Also covered by us. So then Junkenstein goes to a Sonic drive-in and throws food at people. Then for some reason he starts working the grill, throws hamburgers at Junkyard Dog and Andre. Junkyard Dog and Andre end up in front of a jukebox. They play a song and it scrambles the robot's cassette, because that's definitely how... You know, if you play a jukebox near a cassette player, that cassette player is done, man. I don't know if you remember that.
That's science.
Science!
I'm aware.
And then he falls back on the ground. Now we're back at the junkyard. JYD, he reads Dracula to Andre. It's like dark and it's raining again. It's just like how we were at the beginning of this episode. And Junkenstein then gets the idea to turn Junkenstein into Junkula, and he's like wearing a cape and he's got like a wig or something. I forgot to even ask, like, do you even remember what Junkenstein looked like?
Yeah, I mean, just like a generic robot, you know. He's got like a square metal head, body. He had like one leg was like a wheel and the other leg was like kind of like a peg leg almost.
But didn't he also have like a fur body?
No, maybe that's something you were hoping for.
No, I'm pretty sure he had like a weird, like, furry torso. I guess it would have helped if I actually...
But folks, he did not have a furry torso. Oh. It was all metal, all man bot.
All right. Well, I'm going to go back and check someday.
I'm sure you are.
So, and by the way, I don't know if we mentioned, you can watch this episode in its entirety on YouTube to find out for yourself.
Right.
There'll be a link in the description, blah, blah, blah. So, all right, so we're almost done here. Andre gets scared and says, he's going... That's a Junkyard Dog. I'm going to Superfly's place. So Andre runs to Superfly.
That you're not safe there either.
Superfly Jimmy Snooks place and walks in as Superfly is murdering his girlfriend, and he helps him cover it up. The end.
Yep, as ordered by Vince McMahon.
Yes. Why they put that in the episode, I don't know. It's weird. I didn't add anything or anything. That's how it was.
Yeah.
See for yourself.
Oh, God, that would have been a better ending.
See, side note, the episode I really wanted to cover of this, I couldn't find. It's like either the second to last or last episode, and it features Superfly. That way we could have had more murder references. But when they referenced them at the end of this, I was like, perfect. So we're not done yet. We cut to more live action footage. This time, Mean Gene is in the dressing room with every kid's favorite lady wrestler, the Fabulous Moolah. And he starts asking her about beauty tips. And she says she applies a mud pack to her face.
And they just keep going. This felt ad-libbed, and like they were just like stretching it out for time. I'll be Moolah, you be Mean Gene. I put this mud pack on my face.
Oh, really? And that's what makes you so beautiful?
You can see how beautiful I am. I'm you see it when I'm on TV.
Does it lift and stretch?
Yes, it does.
Oh, well, you heard it here, folks. And then out of nowhere, Lou Alban...
No, and then he's like, how many times do you do this? Yeah. Like 2 times a week? And she's like, two times a week, unless I'm on the road. Then I sometimes only do it once.
Right, yeah.
Like, what?
It is it's a legit, like, interview for maybe, like, a man on the street, like, Q&A that you would see on the news.
It felt like an improv exercise, like a yes and improv exercise that Mula is very bad
at. No,
because she's
no
like
comedy. Yeah,
she's like yes and kind of an and.
Yeah,
like she's like barely giving Mean Gene any
right.
Work
not
with.
Even Mean Gene could save this sketch, and then for no reason, yeah. Lou Albano, aka the original live action Super Mario, shows up and says, "Mula, you look beautiful." Cut. The end. Like there was never a punchline. Yeah. You hell, it just wasn't. It wasn't good. It wasn't good at all.
Yeah, awful.
All right, awful. Are you ready to render your verdict here?
Let's absolutely.
All right. Remember before we rated it, that is the question. All right, Captain Lou Velasquez, do you think that Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling should be remembered for all of wrestling history or toss in the black void with, let's see, with WCW, with Wrestling Society X and Lucha Libre, or no, Lucha Underground? Should it be forgotten with those things?
Yeah, this was pretty bad. Bad animation. Voices are kind of bad too. Terrible story. Nothing's funny. Yeah, this is an easy no for me. What about you?
Oh yes, I agree. I could see how some people might be nostalgic for this, but I assure you, dear listener or viewer, that if you go back and watch this, you will see that it definitely does not hold up. I assume the latter day animated WWE stuff, like where they team up with Scooby-Doo, is probably better. Maybe we'll watch one of those this month. We'll see. But yeah, this is not even in the terms of Saturday morning, like 80s cartoons. It's just not good. Not funny. Not interesting. Very basic
right.
Kind of first drafts kind of stuff. So for all those reasons and more, I say it shall be we say it shall be obliterated.
The heathens have spoken. You are obliterated.
All right. Whew. Well, I mean, though it was rough to watch, it was kind of fun to make fun of after the fact, I don't know. Can't recommend.
No, definitely can't.
All right. Well, before we sign off here, anything else you want to add?
Well, just that next week, I think we're covering Thunder in Paradise again.
Okay.
Which I should have mentioned earlier, right? Because we're going to do an episode with your hero, Sting.
I'd say he's our hero at this point.
The episode I picked out, I just want to read the description. I think it's on YouTube. It's called C. Quentin. Mm-hmm. And it does seem like it's a bit of a part two of the episode beforehand, but I'd rather go with this part of it, because one, I don't want to watch two episodes. I don't want to write up two episodes,
sure.
But, listen to the description for this one. Spence and Bruce's arch enemy Hammerhead, that's Sting.
I remember.
Spence and Bruce's arch enemy Hammerhead, a dangerous criminal, takes over the underwater prison he's imprisoned in.
This sounds awesome.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about this one.
All right, other than that, once again, don't forget to check out the Escape to Earth Kickstarter. Only 8 days left. And I think that is pretty much everything. So yeah, we will see you next Sunday for Thunder in Paradise. And don't forget to I can't forget my sign off here. We'll see you next Sunday as we continue to unearth more obscure media.
Oh wait, what? Steve, you didn't did you whoa.
What?
You didn't talk about your time at WonderCon, did you?
No. I mean it was a good time. It was just one day. I made myself a shirt of my own comic book in case somebody looked at it and was like, "Hey, cool shirt." And I was like, "Oh yeah, well I got my comics in my backpack right here. If you'd like to buy some, And I actually got one sale out of that. But the main goal was to get, I ended up getting some covers, or some issues of Escape to Earth signed by the guy that does my variant covers. And that is now a tier on the Escape to Earth Kickstarter, because I only had him sign like four books because I didn't want him to get like carpal tunnel or anything like that. So yeah, met him. I met the creator of the Ultraverse superhero, Nightman. And how much do you love the Nightman and the Ultraverse, Yahel?
Oh, they're my favorite things to not watch. No, they're fine. They're just
you're just not educated. And I think this summer is going to be the summer of Ultraverse. I've been talking about it for a long time, but
man, I'm going to be very sick this summer. I have a disease scheduled for this summer.
You enjoyed the summer of Image, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but I mean, Image is fun.
So is the Ultraverse.
Sure. By the way, I did want to say Sasquatch a Dime did join the chat. He said, just hopped in. Go for another hour. I'll catch you next week. Yeah, sorry, man. Well,
Sasquatch, make sure you check out my Kickstarter for Escape to Earth Issue 3. Only 8 days left. Yeah, I think that all in all, WonderCon was good. I guess although there was no Ultraverse panel this year, which was a disappointment. But I did run into Tom Mason, one of the founders of the Ultraverse, while I was there, and had a little chat with him. I know you're jealous. I see you making eyes over there. Let's see. Okay. Yeah. Anything else to add before we sign off for real this time?
Nope. I'm good.
All right. We'll see you all next Sunday for more wrestling action.
You've been enjoying Obscurity Now, a podcast that's recorded live to tape and streamed to Twitch and YouTube. Subscribe so you never miss an episode or hilarious quip. Take us with you by following the download links provided in the show notes to wherever you get podcasts. And take notice of our various social media links if that's what you're into. I'm not here to judge. And make sure you join us live next week at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, as we continue to discuss more obscure media only on Obscurity Now.